You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. Think of us as the love child of the National Review and Mad Magazine. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us through PayPal or Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow. We are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. If you are new to the program, we catch up for the first 20 minutes or so, and then we deep dive into analyzing current events and society from a libertarian perspective. This show is for adults by semi-adults, so please be warned, the language is strong and offensive sometimes. With me, as always, is my faithful co-host, Greg Lenz. Greg, how are you?
You know, I would love to say I'm doing well, but I think you know me well enough to know that that would be a lie.
I know. We're all a little bit tense today, it seems.
Well, you know, when you guys just abandoned me, like I'm Steven Glansberg eating dessert alone at the lunch table, you know, that's what tends to happen.
We didn't abandon you.
You abandoned me. You decided. There's a clear favorite now in the whole family.
We had to go, and you had to stay with Bittner, and I'm sorry.
You know how you got bitten.
I got totally bitten to mute my own co-host did it to
me. I know. And with us as well is Kat Anagnos. Kat, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm sure doing
you
fine.
Are. I'm sure you are.
I'm doing well.
Both of you are doing well,
I had a
well,
great day
you?
Today.
I'm sure you did. Yeah. And I'm that pleases me.
I had pancakes for breakfast this morning. I had a great day at work. I ate a bag of Lay's potato chips, which I brought an extra one for you, buddy, because I know
you
like the greasy
fingers. You brought
fingers.
One and you took it back.
Exactly.
This is like that. What's that? White Christmas.
Yep.
Yeah. White elephant.
White,
white
elephant
game.
Yeah,
that's what this is like.
Elephant.
Hey, I brought you a gift, and then
wipes the greasy fingers God. Right on you.
She did that the other day. She was like, "Can I borrow your computer?"
Someone complimented me on my shirt. Like, I've never seen that design with the handprints that just run down your back. I'm like,
right.
Oh, well, we have a new co-host, and
right.
She's very socially adroit.
Right, right. And then Dear Leader provided me with sustenance in the form of a Jimmy John's sandwich.
He did, which I'll be honest, I do love Jimmy John's more so than any other sub shop.
I tried to pay for both of our meals, but he wouldn't have it because Dear Leader provides for me.
The rumor on the street is that Greg eats only Jimmy John's.
Number 9, his jalapeno chips. That's my go-to probably three, four nights a week.
So how many meals do you eat in a day?
One. I do coffee. I do a double. So it's called a black eye, not a black guy.
Right, right.
I don't order a Harry. But I do a black eye with cream and then a black cherry limeade refresher, one of their like energy drink things.
Mm-hmm.
That's breakfast and lunch. And then I read the news at lunch every day.
And then for dinner...
And then Jimmy John's number 9. Like, not all the time. Like, I'm, like, particular. And, like, a lot of things bug me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, digestive system-wise. So, that's kind of why.
Oh, okay.
So, you eat a Jimmy John's sandwich every single night for dinner?
No. It's just, like, that would be my favorite. That's my go-to.
What do you eat if you're not eating? Do you ever cook?
Oh, yeah.
What do you cook?
Usually, like, Italian.
Really?
Like, spaghetti, because it's easy.
Don't you get hungry in the daytime?
No. Like, if I don't eat in the morning, I find I don't get hungry until, like, around 6.
Really?
Uh-huh. But if I do, I'm hungry like 3 times a day.
See,
then like digestive things kick up, so.
I can't eat a ton for breakfast or a ton for lunch. Otherwise, I get sleepy.
Yeah.
Like, it's like drinking. Like, I don't really drink socially so much. Like, I drink with purpose. Like, I drink to get drunk. I eat because I'm hungry. I don't, like, graze. I don't know how people, like, graze or, like, do things, like, in moderation.
So, what is the purpose of drinking tonight?
Sitting next to it.
Oh, got it.
Stress management.
Understandable. Everybody has their vices.
I don't drink to make myself more tolerable. I drink to make others more tolerable.
Yes.
Very astute of you. I understand.
I'm sure you do.
Astute.
Look at that. That's a astute, yeah. That's a solid 860 SAT word. Well done.
Thank you. Astute.
Yeah, we will be off next week because we all just need a little break. You know, like about once a week in the spring, the summer, the fall, and
quarterly.
About every quarter, we just go, you know what? We need to wake a week.
I never tire of you. I've never tired of you.
Exactly. I never tire of you.
Huh.
I don't tire of any of you. It's our friends that I tire. No.
I can understand that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need a vacation.
I had to
apparently, though, it isn't mutual.
It was your sister's birthday.
A lot of anagnose in
Happy
the last 24 hours.
Happy late one-day birthday to my sister. It's her 25th mid-year or halfway to 50 crisis.
She was well-dressed.
Very. She was not in her Elkhart formal.
What did her shirt say? It was very Swarovski-y.
Namaste at the bar.
That's what it was, yes. Right. I bowed the light in you at the bar.
As we were going to the bathroom, this random girl was like, she was like probably 12 drinks in. She's like, oh my God, well, what does your shirt say? And my sister was like, well, it says namaste at the bar. I bought it like this. She's like, oh my God, that's freaking clever. I should have that for tomorrow when I go to my 9 a.m. yoga class, and it'll probably make my downward dog better, you know? My
sister someone was like, that hammered that early? Because oh, yeah. This was 7 o'clock. Like, the party started at 7.
Yeah.
Right. And it wasn't really...
We were the only people in there, really.
No, it was like when people hear the word party, it was literally...
A libertarian party.
A libertarian... No,
it was 20 people awkwardly staring at their shoes, passively, aggressively, being mean to each other.
And then communicating on Facebook messages.
And
then
right, and eating...
Leaving early because someone who shall go unnamed, Tim McGuire, kept annoying the only cool people at the party about this. Literally spent an hour talking to them about Dave Ramsey and their finances and it was early.
Yeah, a woman was trashed. But
I can't believe I didn't see her. I wish I would have got to experience that drunk girl at the bar before 9 p.m.
Yeah, and then my sister hugged me, which she's never done before. So
Chloe is not a hugger.
No.
You guys both have things about, like, the you know, physical proximity.
Right.
Yours is
mine's
dramatically
too
close.
Much,
yes.
And hers is a little too distant.
You are, you do more, way too much to make up for it.
Beautiful.
It was the most, like, it was like two lobster calls.
No, it was the, it's like when, what's his face?
Bittner?
No, what is his name? Oh, my God. Oh, Ted Cruz and Carly Fiorina or whatever.
Yeah. Yes. It was like a finger grab.
She had this, and he grabbed
it. He was like covering her white power.
Ticket. Oh, man, that was bad.
We're gesturing on the video. If you want to go to our YouTube channel, you can check out the...
I forgot we're on right now.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were live streaming.
No live stream today. Mm. We're just we're just recording this for YouTube.
Given the anxiety-ridden state, I feel like the wrong comment might... Somebody might get holocausted.
But here's the thing.
No, not you. A listener.
Oh.
Oh yeah. No. The tension rises, and you know you just need a break. And you know I've been around people. I'm like weirdly. I go up and like I'm very extroverted. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm an ENFJ in the Myers-Briggs, and I love people, and I love my friends, and I love seeing them. But I need a significant amount of time by myself, and mm-hmm. I haven't gotten that.
They say that's one of the things about extroversion is that the more intense of the social settings, the more like intense the solitude you need to recover.
Yeah.
Well, the ENFP, which both Greg and I are, they are the most introverted. Oh, you did. Understandable. Yeah, they are the most introverted of the extroverts, so they need significant.
Oh yeah, like I love people. Like I love parties and everything, and then like. At the same time, I could go and just like read for days
and order your number 7 at Jimmy John's.
9.
Number 9.
Italian nightclub with peppers and then jalapeno chips. Yeah.
Right.
And then large Diet Coke.
Mm.
Yeah. Like I have a week off, and so I'm going to spend the next, you know, on the July and these December breaks, I get 3 weeks off a year and I hibernate. I don't go anywhere. I mm-hmm. just stay in my apartment. I don't leave and I don't talk to anybody.
But in the summer, it's more difficult because you're very much, you're a fire person.
Yes.
Right.
You have a delightful
fireplace in my luxury apartment.
And, you know, in it. Kat's doing something right now. I'm not sure what she's doing.
Snapchatting for the followers to see that we're podcasting.
I just like I need a significant amount like
recuperation.
Right. Like so we've gone hard and we've had several different parties and a lot of different parties over the last, you know, little bit, and I just need some time to myself. And
you just got to get like recalibrated.
It's interesting to like you don't realize how important rest is until you get to like this kind of point where you're just like, if I don't get some rest, I'm going to tear the eyes out of everyone that I love. And I honestly don't know how like parents do it, because there
isn't mother like being a mother, especially if it's like stay at home mom.
Yeah, like
wow.
I don't know how they do it, because you're never alone. You never have that time to recharge your batteries. Like that to me would be super hard.
There is no peace ever. Yeah.
Well, and I'm the type of person when even if we like if my family has gone on a vacation in the past, we're not the type to do the amusement park, the go every day.
Touristy stuff?
No way. We just like chill. You go to Alabama a lot, we just sleep on the beach.
Right. Yeah. You go to Gulf Shores?
Yeah. Yeah. My grandpa had a house down there.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. You just
wow.
Sold it this
year.
Oh,
I bet he killed it. Because that place has exploded since, like, we've been going there for, like, 10 years.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, it's great down there. But we're just the type of people, you know, my mom, like, we all love to read. We just wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning, just go to the beach, and we're there until 6 o'clock at night, and then just veg. I don't want to see anybody. Don't want to talk to anybody. So that's what I'm going to do this weekend, going home, and just going to lay on the beach up northern Indiana. The Indiana Dunes.
So, oh, yeah, no, those are, like, shockingly nice.
Yeah, ridiculously nice.
I know, it's a hidden gem of the state. Like, people always laugh because Michigan beaches are usually considered better, but it's better.
Yeah, no, it's great.
So we will miss you all next week. I want to say hello to all of the new listeners. I checked the stats before we walked in here, and we were at 9,999 downloads on that last episode on 216. And we've had, like, 3,000 or 4,000 downloads just in the last few days. So... 9,000, it was kind of our peak on episode 204, and then all of a sudden we just started zooming, and it reached kind of a critical mass here in the last week, and I contribute that to
your appearance on Bad Christian podcast.
On the Bad Christian Network on Break It Down with Matt Carter. I didn't put it in the feed, but you should go check out my interview with Matt Carter on Break It Down, which is part of the Bad Christian Network, which I love. I've been a fan of them for about a year. The Bad Christian Podcast is kind of like what we do. They're three guys who sit around with their friends and talk about, you know, Christianity and politics and life and
morality
and morality and society amongst each other. And it's a no holds barred look. They say it's a Christian podcast where they say curses. And so they're very controversial over that. But I love those guys. And it was really exciting. I've been talking to you guys for a couple of weeks. I'm like, if this happens, this is going to be awesome. Cause I'm such a huge fan of those guys. And
apparently you did quite well in courting the bad Christians.
I did. Oh, I myself am a terrible Christian.
I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't say that. You let a stray in, gave her food, shelter, nourishment.
You know, once you've sinned once, why not go the full 9 yards?
That's exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like, right. Murder, lying.
If you're going to do so, Abraham Lincoln, if you're, whatever you are, be a good one.
Exactly.
Yeah. So welcome to all of our new listeners. We are libertarians, and that means that we are about several things, mostly non-intervention. So we don't like government interfering in your personal life, in the economic affairs of our citizens or the world. We don't believe in overseas wars unless it's a justified war. You know, libertarians don't believe in like going over and staying in Afghanistan for 20 years, but we do believe that if we're attacked, we should fight a war. Mm-hmm. Like, in my opinion, World War II was a just war. World War I was not. Vietnam was not. You know, so
the only thing in hindsight, you would probably say that World War II ended up creating the rest of the wars we've fought since.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's unintended consequences. And a lot of what this show is about is the unintended consequences of policy. And
beyond just what's on the, you know, surface of a discussion.
Absolutely.
Issue.
So we are irreverent. We are not your typical talk program. We're a group of about 20 friends here in Indianapolis that get together and talk about politics and break it down as much as we possibly can. So I want to thank everybody. So to have, you know, 3,000 new listeners in less than a week is pretty exciting for us. And we want to welcome you guys and hope that you guys will stay. And if you like it, please share the podcast. I know that last night at Chloe's dinner, I sat next to a new listener to the podcast, Lauren.
Yeah.
She, because of because of Kat coming on the program, she started checking out the podcast and said she really enjoyed it.
Good.
Yeah, which was cool because I, you know, because my sisters and Kyle are so much older, is that all of their friends I knew going in, because I was a freshman in college when Chloe graduated. So I didn't really know any of her friends that well, but with Lauren, who's the new listener, she just was like, oh, I love the podcast, by the way, which was really awesome that it wasn't like, you know.
Sorry. There's also a cat named Mittens that loves to come and interfere with the podcast.
She's our Hitler.
Yeah.
Right.
Mittler.
But Mittler. Yeah, but it's just cool that, you know, it's not our best friends or our friends who are
right.
listening
the
anymore.
People who would support you even if you did the worst podcast imaginable.
Exactly. We're starting to
those people actually don't listen.
Yeah, they don't.
No, unless they're on.
Yeah.
Unless they're on.
Like or they'll listen to the segment where they're brought up.
Right.
Exactly.
Sorry. See, we're trying to be professional, but we've got a cat that destroys the podcast all the time.
One thing you'll learn about dear leader yes. Chris Spangle is that he has the most unruly pussy you'll ever see.
Very, very good. We're coming off of a stunning defeat. Last weekend was...
I can't even talk about it.
...was a kick in the nuts.
Wait, we've recorded since then,
no,
haven't we?
No, we have not. We haven't. We were up for an award. We were up at PopCon.
For the big one.
For comedy and for...
news.
For news, and we lost.
And then podcast... Greatest podcast in the history of ever created podcasts.
Just a podcast that, you know, is probably going to peak at 12,000-13,000 listeners here in the next couple weeks.
10 feet higher.
Lost to a podcast in comedy that had 7 episodes. And then congratulations to them. We're not. I'm a bad sport. Greg is not. I don't know about Kat.
I was pissed. I'm not going to lie.
Were you really?
Here's the thing. When we all lost, we graciously clapped and we didn't really think anything of it because in reality, the competition was held in the basement of this convention and there were 3 people in the audience and the awards and
very
quotes,
low energy podcast awards.
The awards were like freaking cardboard paper in a Walmart frame. Like it wasn't anything big, but however, we pretended to be outraged for the bit. And then about 30 minutes into being outraged, I turned to Spain and I was like, I'm actually really upset we lost.
I threw a chair.
Yeah.
Honestly.
You tried.
I tried.
You tried.
Well, they were bolted down.
It was bolted. Because they knew we were going to be there.
Yeah.
You can thank Bobby Knight.
Yeah.
But we
lost to a grandchild of ours in news. We lost.
I can't talk about this.
To an atheist podcast.
Secular.
The secular perspective. It is a spinoff of a podcast that Greg and I helped start called The Obsessive Viewer.
I was actually the first host of The Obsessive Viewer, and we actually do with their hosts local movie and film producers horror festival each year.
Right.
This is going to be the 4th year. And I was the first host of the first episode of Obsessive Viewer and then didn't get invited back for a year. Then came on again and then I'm still waiting on that 3rd invite.
Right.
You know, and so then they've actually done extremely well. Matt Hurt is, I mean, every bit as passionate about libertarianism as you and I are and Kat.
Right.
And like the people in our universe. He is that obsessive about movies, film, books.
TV,
I mean,
yeah.
The guy is encyclopedic and just an exceptionally brilliant guy, really, to be honest. But so Matt has really grown it into a brand and done extremely well. But a guy that was kind of a fringe friend ended up, or his co-host, Tiny Anthony Ramian, he started this thing called The Secular Perspective. He wanted to get around, do what we do with a round table and discuss religious issues, but from a secular perspective, rather than like how we do news and current events from a libertarian perspective. And then he, you know, got engaged and you know how the effect women have on podcasting.
Yep.
You end up slowly but surely not seeing him anymore and they just don't have time because it's been booked by others.
Sorry, were you talking about me?
No.
No.
Oh, carry on.
No, my buddy. I'm talking about all of my buddies that like they start these wonderful projects with all this potential and then they fall in love and then they lose all ambition and just it becomes like kid parties and loafers.
Can't imagine what that's like, Greg.
Did you just touch him again?
I caressed his face.
I have the weird thing about being touched.
Yep, I know.
Caressed, really. It's not so much touching as it's very, you lingered.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
Awkward.
Yeah. Hey.
I'm kidding.
I thought it was great.
It's fine.
I brought you
my
a bag
beard
of
was
chips,
slightly, you know.
Greg.
You can eat them. I'm happy.
I
know what's really going on here. But so then, and so then we lost because Chad took it over from Tiny because Tiny quit. And then Chad kind of rode the coattails to the success and won the award and beat us. And you made it clear you weren't pleased.
I'm not happy about it. You know, Kat, you said what?
Like I said, at first it was a joke, and then I got pretty angry. Oh, right. Well, my horrible joke that I said.
Right.
Right. Well, we were so, so upset, and then, you know, after all of our pouting and booing and mean tweeting, and then Spangle, or I'm sorry, Dear Leader, tried to throw the chair, but we found out it was bolted to the ground. I just said, you know, it's all right. Let the Atheist Podcast have this award because they're going to hell anyway. So. Yeah,
I mean, their treasures are here on earth and ours are in heaven.
Right.
As Methodists, three of us are Methodists.
Exactly.
We'll be on the right side of the pearly gates laughing and judging at
That's
them.
That's right.
And we will get our own awards.
Damn right.
So congratulations.
Eternal salvation.
I mean, really, our grandchild won the award, so we really can claim victory.
Exactly.
And no. Greg and I can claim victory.
Hey, for the record... That's fair. That's a fair point.
What's happened to We Are Libertarians is you've heard of the Spanish Inquisition.
Right.
This is the Greek Inquisition.
Yes, exactly. The Greek invasion.
Yeah.
You give Germany that money back and then you can talk.
Exactly.
No. But yeah, I'm so glad you did that because that's something we've not been particularly strong at is cross-promoting through non-political podcasts, you know, other podcasts.
Right.
And we've kind of just recruited in-house within our little libertarian silo. And so I'm so glad that, you know, you're the kind of individual worthy of invitations on things such as the Bad Christian
podcast. Well, I'm frankly amazed as well. And I thought it went really well. He enjoyed it. And so I'm looking forward to going back.
I know this guy. He's a terrible Christian. I think he's perfect. And this would really be great.
Yeah.
But thank you all for giving us a try.
Yeah, so we appreciate it, and so we lost one to the atheist this week, but we gained some new listeners, so we appreciate that, and we do thank PopCon. We ended up having a great time, and like if you're in the Midwest, like go to PopCon. It's a blast.
And everyone is so friendly and outgoing and nice. It's amazing.
It's one of the best. It's like a pop culture convention, and it's sort of like it's not like Comic-Con. I mean, it's a little more everything, so it's really a fun time.
Yeah, they had video game stuff like
Harry Potter.
Entire
game zone set up in a room, which was really if you're into gaming, which I know you are, like that would have been heaven, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, it was just a very cool place to be.
So what we want to talk about this week is anti-intellectualism, because I think we're starting to hit a peak, and this is something you know, there's a lot in the news, and you have the Donald Jr. stuff, and we'll maybe touch on that here at the end. But this is a trend that I think is really starting to take off, and that is getting rid of expertise and saying, you know what, the experts aren't the experts. Intellectuals don't know what they're talking about. So we want to break some of that down and have a conversation about anti-intellectualism, you know, which hopefully you, as in this follow-up episode, find interesting. But I think you will.
And it's important to frame it right. You know, much of this it's sort of hit a critical mass, like we've been talking about. Like this, Pew recently conducted a survey, and for the first time, the majority of Republicans thought attending college was a bad idea.
Right.
And that, you know, that created the immediate backlash on Salon, Daily Kos, The Atlantic, all of them saying, and Salon was the article that was published with the headline, "Have We Hit Peak Anti-Intellectualism?"
Right.
And that is just at the point where is higher education actually considered like the fifth estate or, you know, like the manipulative tool of government rather than something to be pursued and to aspire to, you know, it's become, even education has become politicized.
Right.
You know, we're like, this is the most everything's politicized at that point.
Right.
For sure.
Learning's politicized, whoa.
So how do we, let's define anti-intellectualism. Let's start at the very beginning. And the definition is opposing or hostile to intellectuals or to an intellectual view or approach. And kind of break that down a little bit. Expand on that, Greg.
I think it's important. Yeah, like getting it set properly is really important because a lot of people would hear us say peak anti-intellectualism and immediately think, oh, you're anti-knowledge. You'd rather keep people ignorant, and that way you can control them and manipulate them.
Right.
And that isn't at all personally how I would feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am someone that thinks that, you know, highly, highly value education.
Absolutely.
And think that, you know, education should never stop once a degree is awarded.
Both of your parents are professors, right?
Yeah, yeah. My dad, lifelong professor.
Oh, yeah.
Your mom is?
Yep, my mom is, yeah.
And she educates me daily on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
She's literally right now educating us on messages.
Oh.
So
sliding in DMs.
Yeah.
She's in our DMs.
No, but so what it really is there's been there's been a slow, I mean, actually, it's just societal decay in general in institutions. And
right.
even institutions as far as like public intellectuals, the people you see that are on the nightly panels on CNN, the experts they bring in to provide commentary, analysis, and information, they have slowly but surely become seen as partisan hacks. And so much of science and much of, actually, primarily the social sciences are where most of the politicization has happened, but then also you're seeing it with the rise of things like Inconvenient Truth and Al Gore, and climate change is another area where the politics has really dominated the hard science, the facts, the analysis, because there's been a lot of conflicting information about how the models have been assembled, how the predictions have turned out. And so it's just peak anti-intellectualism is being by the left positioned as anti-knowledge, and by the right as, well, this isn't anything more than thought control.
And y'all deserve it a little bit. I mean, like that.
You've been wrong. Look at everything you've said. Here's your track record.
Right.
Explain.
I always kind of marvel at people. Well, we need regular people to do things. It's like as if somebody who has a college master's or PhD somehow not a regular person.
Well, that's in the United States. I've always said that, you know, there isn't a national religion other than higher education. Education is our like be all end all
right.
cure, and yet it hasn't panned out. Like you end up with credential inflation, where baristas with masters, you know, it doesn't work like it used to. It's not. It doesn't help you climb up that the social mobility ladder,
right?
And so it's inevitable. All these circumstances coming together, you're going to get a backlash, especially if you've been wrong,
right?
When you're disproven, that's the That's the thing that sucks about putting yourself out there, is if you're wrong, it's hard to recover.
Right.
Like, how do you guys feel about it?
Well, I think that people are experts for a reason, and people that dedicate their lives to a craft, people that dedicate themselves to learning and studying a subject or a process, are experts for a reason, and they should be listened to. I mean, even politicians. I'm not anti-politician for the most part. I think that politicians, by and large, have been pigeonholed by the public, and they have no balls, and that's the problem. But you look at people who run campaigns, people who practice the art of political science, which I think it's an art, not a science necessarily.
I think it's really tough. Like, the social sciences really shouldn't be called that.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a terrible thing to call them, because I just don't think that's remotely correct.
Sure. So you have something like political science, or you have something like a football team, for instance. Let's apply it to sports, because this may be easier for people to understand. Like, I don't know anything about football. I don't know anything about sports. But I feel that my opinion is as valid as Chuck Pagano's in the Indianapolis Colts. He's the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Why is my opinion as equal to Chuck Pagano and the GMs and the owners? Why are we equal? We're not. And yet the fans feel this sense of ownership over the decisions that the team makes, and they don't understand the different levers that they have the ability to pull and the buttons that they have to push to make a team work like an NFL team. You've got all kinds of different personnel choices, salary choices,
strategies
that go into things. And so when things are announced and decisions are made on a football team, everybody loses their mind and they said, well, they should have done this. They should have drafted this guy. But that guy may not have been available or may not fit the long-term strategy. And we are applying that kind of thinking to politics, to business, to society, to religion, to everything, and throwing out any kind of belief in what experts have to say or experienced people have to say in favor of just our own gut. And just because we have an opinion on something, it doesn't mean that our opinion is equal to somebody who is like the head of an NFL coach, for instance.
How do you feel about that, Kat? Do you have any particular way you – does it bug you at all? Like there's actually this last year, the election, I felt like was this – all culminated and everyone was an expert all the time on the entire presidential election.
Oh, for sure. And I think that, you know, like we were talking about for college campuses, especially, is everyone, like, education is being politicized, right? And it's true, because like I said, I've had friends who on the day of day after the election night or whatever, came to my dorm and were like, oh my gosh, my teacher just, my professor, college professor, started bawling in the middle of class because of how, because of the outcome of the election, you know? And we had,
wow.
Yeah. And this wasn't made up. And we had professors who were professors of the social sciences, I'm assuming, right? Sociology,
political science,
history,
anthropology, linguistics,
social work.
So, oh yes. Well,
is that a social science?
Is being nice to bums a major?
Oh my gosh. But
my mom's a social worker. I tell her that. That's a joke all the time.
So I'd say, don't let my roommates hear
like,
that.
Mom, how was that graduate course in being nice to poor people?
Oh no. But what was I going to say? Yeah. So these highly intelligent, highly educated college professors at a state school, were crying in the middle of class and were just, I'm so worried because of how you kids are going to turn out because of Donald Trump. You know what I mean? And just, they let all...
Literally shaking?
Yeah, literally shaking. And they let, students out early to go have anti-Trump protests on the quad, which like
a national hug day.
Four people went to. Oh, yeah, there were free hugs being offered. They sent out mass emails to all the students. And this isn't like some small... This is a state school.
Yeah.
They sent out
Ball
mass...
State's a very large university. What is it, like 25,000, 40,000 undergrads somewhere near?
And they sent out emails saying if any of us need to talk, the counseling center will be open even more.
You kidding?
I'm not even exaggerating. This is 100% true.
You got like a university email that said if you need counseling services, it'll be available because of the election?
It was ridiculous. So it's just, these highly educated people who are they're in charge of not even just the normal level of education that is the American standard. They are the higher education, market. And they're just being politicized is ridiculous.
Yeah. And right? So do you feel like that it's, you feel like your educational experience, like within the liberal arts specifically, is already politicized? Like it's
for
so
sure.
Biased in one way, it's impossible to not, or to get the other opposing arguments.
For sure.
And any
completely.
Attempt to try and bring it back the other way is just resisted as tyranny.
Exactly.
Well, it's rejecting intelligence.
Exactly. And you can't, because I was a journalism student. I guess I kind of still technically am. But
and you're getting ready to be a junior. So you're still knocking, you're still figuring out exactly what you want to concentrate in.
Exactly. So I guess I'm still in the college.
But you've been exposed to them all.
Right. So that's basically where we're at. But they just teach us, we are in charge of finding heartbreaking news and you can't be biased, so you can't listen to Fox News. Or, they did throw in, don't listen to MSNBC, you have to listen to CNN, which, as we all know...
It's fake news.
Right. Based off
I
of
saw
our
the
discussion
GIF.
Is... I know.
Trump tackled CNN.
So it's fake.
Yeah.
It's
fake.
But, you can't speak out about that. And I remember the day after election, one of my news professors, we all came into the class and she was like... I just really want everyone to know, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And I'm just sitting there but like I said, I'm a pretty outspoken person, but you can't, especially on a college campus, and especially in one of the most liberal majors there is,
Would you say journalism is predominantly liberal?
For sure.
The students?
For sure. I only know of two students who were Republican.
Confirmed in the closet.
Who they had, they went to the... what's it called? CPAC?
Yeah, CPAC.
Yeah, two students went and they had the stickers on their laptop. Only two that I know of who were in class with me.
Brown shirts.
Right. No, there's a few other Republicans who are in the CCIM department, but for the most
part,
very, very liberal. Because if you think about it, it's a mirror because they see their, role models like Rachel Maddow and all these kind of people. They want to be like that. The media is so left and... liberal and whatnot, of course.
Well, that's the quick way to, that's the fastest way to get your ticket punched is to be a part of that,
exactly.
That camaraderie and that viewpoint. You get invited to the cocktail parties and, you're groomed and then they own you, though, because you're never allowed to break rank.
Exactly. And that's exactly just how they get in. And so I only had one professor. She was a journalism professor who was independent and she got shit on by all the students. During the election. This was my freshman year, so it was before. So 2015, 2016, before the election.
Wow.
But
and you could tell that she was really, did an excellent job of making sure you couldn't really tell what her political positions were?
She was teaching more of the history of journalism.
Okay.
So it wasn't, she wasn't.
A political type of.
No.
Course of study.
No, but it was, she was independent. She made a few comments. I don't remember what they were about. oh, I don't like Hillary Clinton at all. I don't like Donald Trump. And people were like, well, how can you think that, you know? And it's just like, oh my God. I was a poli sci minor. And I had one professor, my first, he was a libertarian. The best guy.
Oh, you had The Economist?
No.
I know who you're talking about.
Oh, there was
about.
It Cecil?
Cecil Bohannon.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Oh, okay. No. So he even told you he was libertarian?
It was just a new guy. Yeah.
Huh. It wasn't Dr. Horowitz, was it? Steve Horowitz?
No.
Well, where you're going to school, they have the, what's the...
Liberty,
the
new, it's a Liberty new, economic think tank.
Yeah.
An institute.
Oh, for, I don't know anything about
principles.
It.
The Shatner.
Yeah, so
I don't
Steve
know
Horowitz opened it.
It.
Dr. Horowitz.
The Shatner Institute.
His name is,
Horowitz?
Literally, no. Oh. I can't think of the name of the... He was brand new.
Oh, the one you had. That,
yeah, from New Jersey or something.
And did he identify as libertarian, or yeah. did you put it together?
He said he was libertarian. Yeah. He was...
Interesting.
And he did the best job of just talking good and bad of both sides.
Well, that's the nice incredible. Thing about like this show too, is being libertarian frees you to analyze both sides.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's the ideal for any type of liberal arts class that's studying politics mm-hmm. or any type of like public policy.
Yeah. And I took one religious science class, that I had to take for my like
religious
degree.
Science
or religious studies.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It was mortality.
I was like, that'd be interesting.
Death and defying. Yeah, that's what it was. And the professor was, nobody knew what her religion was the entire time. Because she was so good at...
You know they're usually atheists.
You know?
In religious studies departments.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's
really?
Actually, yeah, how a lot of the time they're atheists. They just study it as like it's history.
Really? Wow. Mm-hmm.
So that way they can be objective about it.
That's pretty cool because everybody, the whole class is... And it was like the rumor of the department was, oh, nobody knows who Professor Blank is, like what her thing is, because she speaks so much about Christianity and then she talks about... they have the whole unit about Islam and talked about like Hinduism and Buddhism, and she knew everything and she never gave any hint.
Not even the slightest. That's huh. I mean, one means she did a really good job, but that's usually that's one of the biggest criticisms of conservatives in liberal arts courses when it's religion based is that they are atheists teaching about something they don't. Something they don't know
mm-hmm.
or something that
wow.
they've chosen to reject. And like that, the book God and Man at Yale that started William F. Buckley's career was a criticism of his Yale experience.
Really?
And it was hugely incendiary because that was his critique of the divinity school
mm-hmm.
was that the entire divinity school's department were atheists and the entire economics department were all Keynesian collectivists. And yet all of them were told, go be individuals, go West young man, be industrious entrepreneurs and leaders. And yet everything they learned was either from atheists or collectivists.
Socialists, yeah.
And then wondered why the kids they were turning out were so different than what the intention of the university was and all the alumni were donating to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it was a very interesting class. It was about like, what was it? It was religion, mortality, and death, which sounds
that'd be
something.
Good.
But it was all about, we learned all about, you know, physician's assisted suicide and the death with dignity law, the same thing. And we talked all about... Like that kind of stuff. And it was really interesting.
The morality of assisted suicide.
Yeah. It was such an interesting class.
I'm all for it. I wish more people would invoke it.
Yeah.
So would you say the rise in anti-intellectualism really comes from people feeling that higher learning especially, which is intellectuals work at what places? Where do they draw paychecks generally?
Yeah, the academy.
Colleges, universities.
Public intellectuals in the media.
Think tanks.
They almost all come out of like the same... they all come out of the university. They make their name there and they make some contribution that's seen as extremely
right.
relevant. And then they leverage that into public intellectualism.
Exactly right. And a lot of it comes from, I think a lot of the anger comes from a leftist point of view and a retaliation against that.
Yeah. And I think that's what I don't like about the way the conversation's framed is most of it is framed as, whatever it is the academy has decided is true, even if its consensus and dissenting opinions exist, anything other than what the consensus orthodoxy is heresy and anti-intellectual. You're against, they have a monopoly on what is science and what is not.
Right.
What is knowledge and what is not. And that couldn't be further from the case because the only gains you make in knowledge are by challenging the existing status quo. The danger is you have a monopoly only on ignorance because you won't allow it to be challenged.
It's the same as growing muscle. Unless you're pushing your muscle and tearing muscle, you're not going to grow muscle.
Exactly. You know, it's and the only way to really test whether something's true or not is to see if it's false.
And I kind of see, because, you know, we were talking about how, for the first time, a majority of Republicans think that colleges and universities have a negative impact on the country. 58% think that. And I can completely see that, because if you think about it, a lot of Republicans, you know, there's the stereotype that Republicans are rich white people.
Yeah, there's country club Republicans and Trump Republicans.
Exactly.
Right.
And yeah, the reality TV Republicans.
Right. And Republicans generally, I'm assuming, have more money than Democrats do.
Absolutely. Because it's an older party.
Exactly.
Yeah, they've had longer time to acquire assets.
So, you know, you can kind of go off that. Okay, that, because that's pretty much true. More children from Republican families probably go to college.
That actually, I don't think it. I don't know. I don't want to say, but there's a lot. It's not in vogue to be Republican. Like, you didn't even want to identify before you became a libertarian. Like, you know, kind of really got exposed to it.
Right, but like
you were afraid to admit it.
Right, but like people who come from that family.
Oh,
so Republicans, because they have more money, they tend to send their kids to college more.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah, absolutely. That absolutely was true.
Okay, so that kind of makes sense that they think that colleges and universities have a negative impact because their kids go and then they become Bernie Bros. And
right.
They start taking part in all these protests and they're rebelling and they come home and they've got all these tattoos, which there's nothing wrong with, but that could just, I'm going, you know,
they stopped identifying by a particular gender.
Right, exactly.
They want one scoop of ice cream and think that's all everybody should get.
Exactly. But you know
not
what I
two,
mean?
No. Not two scoops.
I know, just the one.
But you know what I mean? Like these people who come from Republican families go to college and they're exposed and they become Bernie Bros, and then they go home and their parents are like, what are you guys doing? And
I really want to work on my art.
Exactly. And so that's
my
why
podcast.
I'm you know, and right, but we're the cool ones. But and that's, I think, is why these families and Republicans are now more than ever, they think that college is a waste of time.
Yeah, it's counterproductive to what they want their child to learn,
because now more than ever college professors are extremely liberal and things on college campuses are so liberal.
That's the thing, is where else can you go study the social sciences and earn a living?
Mm-hmm.
Like economics, you can do it as like a Wall Street forecaster, or you could do it as like, you know, owning a hedge fund or something like that, or investments, personal finance. But mm-hmm. outside of that, trying to go and say, yeah, well, I'm an expert in cultural patterns and sociology, or, you know, anthropology or linguistics. It's really tough to like go get a job in that area, that actual focus in the private market.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's natural that the reason universities exist is to employ those individuals, give them a place to go and work on them and advance, you know, the furthering of knowledge in those disciplines.
Right.
Because they are important. It's just they don't necessarily, people don't see the economic value of them in the free market.
Right. And I think now more than ever, college campuses are more political. And I think
all of society after Trump, post-Trump world is more political than I've ever seen.
Way more political. And of course, that's changing, you know, influencing these young kids who are on their own young adults who are on their own for the first time. And
absolutely.
That's what's causing this 58% think that college
is that's
a negative
impact. Stunning number. Because
my parents believe it. And my parents are.
They think your college is actually detrimental to your development.
Oh, yeah. And they. It goes both ways, but now more than ever, they think that, for sure.
Do you feel it is?
Yeah, and I think my sister would agree, too.
Really?
Yeah. Here's the thing, and it's not anything against the school that I go to. It's just the way that the system is, because all of my friends at other schools agree. It's that I feel as if I could drop out now and be okay, in the sense of... Because I feel like for the most part, unless you're studying to become, you know, a nurse or a doctor or an engineer or something like that.
The hard sciences.
Hard scientists that will always be around.
Facts,
right? I feel like there's no point. Like for me personally, with, you know, the whole department, there's no point in me sitting in a classroom, you know, getting... A lot of times you're not taught, you're preached to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, clearly there needs to be like a Copernican shift in the way education's delivered.
And the thing is, if you think about it, those who can't do teach.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, those who can't do teach.
Yeah. And there is a difference in, you know, a lot of great businessmen would be terrible in a classroom.
Right.
You know, like Donald Trump clearly knew how to I mean, at the end of the day, no matter what you say about him, he knew how to take a last name and turn it into a luxury lifestyle brand like no one's ever done.
Right.
All the way to the White House. So clearly, but I doubt he would be able to put that into, to be able to look at that from like a 10,000 feet view, mm-hmm. break it down into like where the inflection points were and what the, you know, take the lessons away from it, put that into a curriculum and right. deliver it to a to a class.
Right, exactly.
And that's the real difference, you know, between the experts in the discipline and the experts in observing the discipline and explaining why they were successful.
Right.
Right. And I just think personally that me sitting in a classroom getting preached to on ideals that I don't necessarily agree to. Sure, some college classes I've been in have been great, but a lot of them are a waste of time. My mind's wandering. I could be doing something else. I could yeah. actually be learning the skills.
It's the disconnect is enormous and
such a disconnect.
The short attention span of society, and like you could really, I'm sure in 45 minutes to an hour, your normal length of your actual lectures.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you could get it all in a 15-minute video with an expert and get way more out of it than the best way to learn is to teach. So
well, that's I mean that, teach it. That's part of the reason that we do the podcast,
right?
So we can learn about this stuff and teach it to others. It forces us to go out and research and find new things.
You know, we love learning. Like, we're so pro education.
Right. Exactly. Well, and here's the thing is,
and with CAD, I've said like opportunities knocking. Like, why stay in school? You know what I mean? When a lot of what you have learned in school didn't really apply for the internship that you just had.
Right. And it's one of those things where I've always kind of, and I've had this discussion before, I've always felt really stupid compared to my peers because they enjoy sitting in the classroom and taking notes and making flashcards and studying and getting good grades on tests. I'm more of the, I need hands-on experiences. I need to
learn by doing.
Learn by doing. And I just feel like it's a waste of time for me to sit in a classroom.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the classes that I've had where I've gone out and actually held the microphone and done the video editing stuff myself
right.
have been great, and I still use that every day.
Yeah, like the practical skill courses.
Practical skills, and I feel like we're just so far away from that, you know?
I mean, most of it's just like a rote memorization assembly line model.
Exactly.
And like the social sciences haven't abandoned that. Like, they still think that they're in the Lyceum and, you know, Plato's giving divine knowledge to a group right. of observers.
And of course there are some things, you know, like nursing students have to memorize terms, right?
Absolutely.
And for, you know,
that's like the standard operating
yeah.
you know, knowledge you need to be able to, you know, draw blood.
Right. And I'm not saying that the traditional college experience is bad. I just think that it's way more it's way less practical than it should be.
Do you enjoy it?
I don't know, honestly. And here's what I think, and my sister would agree. The best thing that college will do for somebody is help them mature, help them learn how to live on their own, help them learn how to deal with people in real situations.
The socialization.
Yeah. And if you go to a good school, have good connections and whatnot.
For me, it was about learning to think critically, expanding outside of just the rote memorization.
Do you think you did, though, kind of before? Because, like, you were already doing things like writing a column in high school.
Yeah, but...
And you were already a big reader.
It gave me more of a framework in which to operate with. Gave me more tools on how to do that stuff. Yeah. And
exposed you to better ways of thinking or approaching it.
Yeah, it gave me the connections then to start a career.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually, yeah, because, well, you were a history major at IUPUI, right?
I was, yeah.
And then how did the connection with Abdul pop up to do radio?
So I was listening to a talk station, and they would play the Indians games, and it would get in the way of me listening to Michael Savage at night when I delivered pizzas. And I wrote a very stern email to the program director, and he said, oh, I used to deliver pizzas. What do you know? And we got to talking via email, and then he said, yeah, if you ever want an internship, let me know. So I went to school, set it up. Got an internship, started there, and I was there for 4 years. So
really, it was your own personal interest that got you the actual opportunity. You just formalized it into an internship through the school.
It's very much like what happened with Kat here, mm-hmm. where, you know, I was...
You left out milk and she stayed?
Right.
Sophomore into junior year, I got an internship with a radio station. I went and did that and realized that most of what I was learning in school was not applicable to what I was doing, and I absolutely bombed that next semester. And then I just stopped going. I just stopped registering for classes. I dropped out and I started working. You know, it just didn't seem to me to be a beneficial it was a time waster.
Yeah, and especially in media too. If that's your, right. Yeah, media is so different than any other medium.
I tell kids all the time, like
industry.
You know, if it's the case where Kat feels like she needs the next 2 years to go and learn more skills and needs more time to mature and needs to do, you know, certain things, then she should do it. Because the realities are that you have to start making money and you have to start working four jobs immediately, you know, right. And you got to be prepared to do that. You got to make rent. You got to pay bills. You got to do all that stuff. But when you could just take 2 years and spend time goofing off and learning how to edit video and doing all that stuff, but don't expect that piece of paper to get you anything.
A lot of times it will get you your first job and then it will never be considered again.
Exactly mm-hmm. right. But, you know, in my case...
Like you earned it the hard way. Most people won't tough it out and do it.
No, and not having a degree was very stressful on me for a long time. And, you know, people still... encouraged me to go back to school, and I'm like, why would I go back to school? Like, I have absolutely no reason to go back to school. That piece of paper means nothing. I'm a polymath. I learn on my own. I just don't need that
credential.
I don't need the credential or the rigor of that structure, you know, because I've built my own structure to become a lifelong learner, to continue to improve myself and build skills. I just don't need it. Like right. it's nothing about my self-esteem. And I feel that a lot of people, and I'm fortunate in that I did that because I was in the workforce 3 years earlier than my peers who all left college at the time that the economy collapsed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they gambled by staying and getting a piece of paper when I started working and hustling, and I'm much further ahead in my career than most of my friends.
In this particular industry, right. Which is the hardest one to rise quickly because a yep. credential does nothing to enhance your value.
Literally, no. Like where the last three jobs I've worked, nobody asked if I had a college degree. My bosses do not know if I have a college degree or not. They don't care.
And most of the time, they literally don't even ask. Matter. They ask for years of attendance. So if you went 4 years, right. It's indistinguishable exactly. whether or not you graduated. Right.
So I have 128 credit hours. Or
you're over then.
I'm 68 credit hours or something. I'm halfway there. But like it to me, going and taking two more semesters of Spanish when I don't ever intend to use Spanish, it doesn't make sense to me. You know, why go and spend that money? And I think that part of the reason that people have kind of this anger towards is they're looking back, you know, as early as a sophomore, junior in college, you know, all the way up to baby boomers are sitting here going, my college was really worthless. And I now have a student loan debt of $10,000 to $100,000 for something that really didn't matter.
Right.
You know, and so that creates...
Your professional career. The social circles and like the experiences, lifelong friendships, that kind of thing.
Right.
Is
right.
The value
and that's where it's kind of... different is because like in high school I thought high school was a complete waste of time skill wise. Looking back, the only thing that I use every single day is the digital media classes that I took all 4 years, both semesters, and I got to like digital media class 8, which there's 3 people in my class, and I learned all about video editing and cameras and lighting.
Now you did like learn like grammar and, you know, proper English and how to write and like those kind of things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, things you have to know.
School is
but then, you know, beneficial. You enhance them and bring them
right.
up. Yeah.
Right.
But then like as far as, and then you're also like you know about things. You're not true. A flat earther because you took science class.
True, true. Right. So yeah.
But it's hard to justify it. Like in hindsight, you're like, did those really change anything? No, but I'm glad I'm aware of them.
Exactly. And it's, you know, I'm glad that I have friends, and at the same time, well, verdict's still out on
strong,
that one.
Strong word.
But I'm glad I've, you know, had those opportunities, and I have because, you know, I played high school soccer. I know what it's like to go through X, Y, and Z, and I know what it's like to be dedicated for orchestra and being in the school newspaper or whatever. You know what I mean? So those things were great. But honestly, I've gotten the most out of extracurricular activities, things that I've pursued on my own,
mm-hmm.
like pursuing soccer, pursuing orchestra, pursuing digital media in high school, in college, you know, sorority, learning how to deal with people, learning how to...
exposing yourself to things to show that you can endure it.
Right, exactly. that kind of thing. And, you know, student government.
Right.
And that sort of thing. And that's where I learned.
Those lessons are priceless because you can't recreate those types of institutions.
In the classroom.
Well, in the real world, they're real institutions.
Right.
In college, it's a chance to sort of like getting your footing through Model UN for the most part. Now, there are still decisions that are made and consequences that happen as a result of those governing, like a student government or a sorority. But you, it gives you this like frame of reference for an experience through like wisdom because you've gone through that simulation before.
Right,
you
exactly.
You know, this is what happened last time. Maybe I'll take a different approach.
Yeah. And it's funny, I consider myself not an expert because I don't have a degree in it or I've not worked in it a long time. But I know a lot about public relations, about PR. And that is strictly because of no class I've ever taken in college, but because of my work as the chief of staff for the Student Government Association.
What better preparation could you get than managing someone's image?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's in crisis. What better training in like crisis management could you get?
Exactly. And so and
manipulation and psychological terrorism.
Right. Exactly. And there was no that wasn't a requirement for my degree. I did it because I wanted to.
Right. You were interested in it.
I was interested.
Which is really what the design of the educational system should be.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it's funny. Like, you know, it would be much better if the focus was skill acquisition, and it was, you know, as needed as you go through your career. Mm-hmm. Like you were a lifelong Ball State Cardinal, and they offered whatever course you needed. You could enroll it at any time, at any location, even online, acquire those skills, point to the credential you needed to step up or do whatever you were trying to do.
And the way our school works is, you know, it's you've got your gen eds, your required classes, which how a lot of schools are, but
almost every except for like Brown.
But the terrible part is that I'm going to my junior year, and I've spent the last 2 years of college 80% gen eds, 20% things about my degree.
Right.
And because I've now had about 40% of my degree, my past degree done, it took me to get to the 40% to realize I don't want to do this. Whereas if it were flipped, you know, 20-80 or whatever, maybe even 60-40.
Or you would just have the ability to access them before having to check off the prereq.
Exactly.
In order to get in.
And I would have.
You'd be able to eliminate the things you don't like.
Saved so much time and money.
Mm-hmm.
A year and a half ago.
Absolutely.
Instead of 2 years later.
Absolutely.
Which just is frustrating. And
that's why most people drop out, is they say they actually never get to the courses where they see the point.
Exactly. And it's so frustrating, and I've got it off easy because, you know, you hear of the super seniors who are there for 6, 7, 8 years undergrad because
the journey
they keep
of self-discovery.
Right. Because they keep changing their major. I had a class, entry-level Spanish class that I had to take, or was it? Yeah, Spanish, because the girl was like, I was a music major for like 4 years from my whole year, and then my last semester I was like, I love Spanish, and she got to do it all again.
Boy, how does she like being a barista?
Right, exactly.
I bet she makes the best lattes.
I know.
But that's just mucho bueno.
Right, but you know what I mean. Like, that's just awful.
Oh yeah, that's the worst part. Because then the debt is a lifelong indentured servitude.
It's literally crippling.
It really is a big reason why we don't have a lot of expansion in the economy.
Drives all of it.
They don't take economic risks at an age when they can afford to take those risks.
Because they can't anymore.
Cat is at 20 and us at 33 and 31 can take risks that, you know, somebody who in their 50s won't, because we have a long time before we retire.
You can make it back up.
Right. And so we can afford to be entrepreneurial. But if you've got a $500 a month student loan payment, you're not going to take that risk.
It's cannibalized entrepreneurship rates for young people.
Absolutely. And that's,
even with the gig economy that's arisen where everything's contract work, which is technically entrepreneurship, it's still the rates are declining, which you would think wouldn't be possible.
Yeah. So so I think the other reason that a lot of people just don't trust quote-unquote intellectuals and the institutions of higher learning is they just don't have a great track record.
That's the thing. And that's what's really driven it is like you look at like you know, that's the one in the show notes, if you don't mind if I look at these real quick. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one of the things I wanted to talk about was even the hard sciences have become politicized.
Sure.
And that is what has, in my opinion, been the primary driver of this rise for Republicans is climate change.
Right.
I think more so than anything else, science became politicized, hard science did, because of environmentalism. And it started, actually, most people don't realize, or, you know, most people just don't remember, is it started all the way back in 1972 with a group called the Club of Rome, which was like the original Al Gore.
Mm-hmm.
And the Club of Rome, 40 years ago, published a book called The Limits of Growth, and it was a report. And in it, it was just hate. Like, everyone thought, oh, look at these new age, these people that are looking into the future and this huge threat that we pose as economic growth and the countries develop and the population gets out of control. And all the change we're going to see, we need to start planning ahead and anticipate the limits of of our resources given humanity's population growth. And so what they forecasted ended up being a bunch of awful predictions on things such as accelerating industrial development, how much would happen, and at what rate, the population growth, widespread malnutrition, out of the worry that we know what we're producing today in our capacity, now apply it to 9 billion people.
Sure.
You know, and so there are this just hysteria and worry about these from these global central planners.
It's a lot of doomsday. It usually takes place because they look at the current situation and they project it, and then they look at the current output, and they never expect humankind to be more entrepreneurial or more scientific, and the future generations will never produce more abundance.
And there's no way to ever account in any model ever about the technological innovation that happens in your ability to efficiently use resources.
Absolutely.
And that's what happens every time. That's actually, to tie it all back, is what really got me about the title of the article, was peak anti-intellectual. Republicans reach peak anti-intellectualism. Well, peak oil was the trendiest thing for all of the 2000s. Mm-hmm. This enormous worry that the appetite for oil and China's development, India's development, you know, all of the BRIC countries becoming first world countries through stable political institutions, that there was going to be another energy crisis, which is actually what the worry of, for the Club of Rome was.
Right.
And you can make a really compelling argument. It's what cost Jimmy Carter his a second term, because Jimmy Carter bought in. He was someone that bought into all this, installed solar panels on the White House roof.
Right.
And there, the way that forecasting works and the market, like Wall Street works, everything is based off of projection. And so all of a sudden, once it looked like oil was going to be severely, like a huge demand for it, it sparked the oil crisis that really just, I mean, Jimmy Carter was doing press conferences telling people to adjust their the standard of living down. Mm-hmm. He was warning people that we need to get used to less. Mm-hmm. We need to get used to higher prices on oil. And then the oil crisis happened because you had political instability in the Middle East with the Iranian Revolution. Mm-hmm. And then you had like limits on supply chains for Chevron and for Exxon. And then there was this huge worry by everyone in the oil and energy markets that there is going to be this constriction on supply. Mm-hmm. So there was a mass price increase. Well, then Jimmy Carter, being the social planner he was, decided to put a cap on the price.
Right.
A ceiling. And so then the United, you know, you couldn't buy anymore. Like, you know, whenever you put a cap on what you'll pay, it limits the supply. Mm-hmm. And so there was a shortage of oil.
Right.
And then Ronald Reagan comes in and starts talking about free market principles, and then stability quiets down in the Middle East. But all of this started because of this Club of Rome. They released a report that told everybody we need to adjust to lower standards of living. And they were wrong. They were just colossally wrong on everything, because the elites, the experts, the environmentalists, Al Gore, they don't have any understanding of that technological progress doesn't happen like geometrically. It's not
right.
A linear, you know, thing. It is like an enormous shift all of the sudden that you just never see coming.
Right.
And if you look, peak oil was the thought that we had hit the absolute max supply available that would ever be available for our world, and how on earth are we going to deal with that with a rapidly developing China? And now you have oil prices so low that most oil, like some countries, aren't even allowing oil tankers to like open the spigot and unload, because doing so would drive the price so low it would cause political instability in places like Saudi Arabia. So this whole idea that peak oil was the trendiest worry forever for the last 10 years, it's hilarious they chose that same title about peak anti-intellectualism, because peak oil was wrong.
Right.
And so this is another alarmist worry about their monopoly on what is and isn't science and intellectualism being challenged. And that's what really got me. I'm not anti-intelligence. Mm-hmm. I'm not anti-education. I'm anti it being considered heresy to criticize Paul Krugman.
Well, that's the thing. Resources are finite, and ideas are not. Ideas are to be discussed, and there needs to be a constant flow of ideas, because ideas are compounding. It's the same thing as
the gains show up in enormous, because they're exponential.
It's homesteading. You buy a piece of land, and then you improve that land, and you build up a house, and then you tear down that house, and you build a new house, and then you tear that one down, and you build a better house, and then you add a barn.
All of a sudden, people invent a roof. They invent, like, Elon Musk in SolarCity, and the shingles that are all sun cells.
Right. So
that's the future.
The mind is just this piece of dirt that is constantly expanding and constantly changing, and not just our own mind, but the mind of humanity at all of on its own. And when you have people trying to limit the boundaries of thought, then you start to force everyone to live into little thatch huts and saying thought can never get better than this thatch hut.
But don't worry, we conducted a study, and you only need $75,000 a year to achieve maximum happiness, which is an actual study that existed and came out last year.
Right.
They started adjusting it down with science.
Sure. You look at something like vitamins, for instance. Studies say that you're just making expensive pee. Well, this was just one poorly done study that the media cited because they were just looking for a headline, and then all of a sudden it slips into a meme, and you say, yeah, I just got these new vitamins. They're really great. It makes me feel great. Oh, yeah, well, I read somewhere that it's just expensive pee. And it's not true. Like, most people are vitamin deficient in some nutrient.
Everybody's chemistry is different.
Personally, I had my first winter where I wasn't insanely depressed because I was taking vitamin D3, you know.
And super male vitality.
And super male vitality really helped a lot this year. But you take something like that where people don't—they just take a news report that they sort of read on a headline.
They just read the headline. And let's be clear, that's what 99% of people do.
Absolutely, there's this thing going around that Matt Chandler talked about on that podcast that like these fake news stories going around, and it's just like half the story is just lorem ipsum. You know, it's like,
yeah, lorem ipsum. Like, they literally could get that passed.
Exactly right. And it just got these massive shares because it had a catchy headline.
Link bait.
People don't go and read it because they don't feel that they have the time or the mental resources to go and do it. And I just like, you can't base your information based on a Huffington Post, you know, when there's so much information out there that something like vitamins do help, that taking vitamins improve so many different processes in your body, but you run into so many people who are just like, well, I read it on HuffPo. And
thank God.
That's we've talked a lot about this, where I just think smartphones and social media, as much as we love them.
Push notifications.
Like, a lot of this is just starting to wear down our brains are machines. Like, right now, our brains, our social capacity is very worn down because as a group of friends, we have spent a lot of time together.
We're the three best friends. We're the three best friends. Three best friends.
That word doesn't mean what you think it means.
And so you have to go back and you have to, like, it's like, you have to let your brain lay fallow, you know, where if you are planting corn every year in the same spot, then it isn't as effective as if
Dust Bowl.
You plant soybeans the next year because you're using up all the nutrients. Like, you have to continually engage your mind in new pursuits and constantly challenge things. And if we're not as a society challenging each other, then we get what we have now, which is just this complete breakdown of communication and anti-intellectual thought, where my intellectualism is okay, but the thought of another person is evil.
And no one has a monopoly on what is and is not intellectualism.
And if you go back and listen to the Break It Down podcast with Matt Carter, because it approaches this, you know, where we're talking a lot about this.
Yeah.
Well, and I
how
think,
it affects Christianity and, you know, your faith.
No, we really didn't even talk about it. We just talked about public discourse.
Oh, yeah, civic discourse.
The whole time, yeah. Well, thanks for listening, Greg.
And I think it's...
I downloaded it. I padded the stats. I just haven't had time to listen to it.
Right. No, and I think it's interesting because think about, like, you know, before, I think the availability of news is ridiculous. Because if you think about it, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, people only got one, maybe two newspapers delivered to their
house.
And
it was all from sources. Like, everyone had it was the same source,
right,
for the most part.
There would have never been, even now when I see, like, the Ball State Daily News, when I get a copy of it, you know, two times a week, whatever, I don't just read the headline. If it interests me, I'll read
it. You actually
read
the newspaper?
I like to see what's going on.
Do you really?
Now a newspaper,
that's awesome.
That's a blog on paper, right?
Right, right. Okay. But if you think about it, there's millions of articles online, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's so lengthy and whatnot, and now we're trained to just read the headline and read the... We don't want full articles anymore. We want a quick...
Executive summary.
We want a quick list. We want a quick...
And bullet-pointed.
Bullet-point list. Yep. We want a top 10 reasons, top...
Oh,
not
my 10, God.
We want a top 17 or 23 reasons why. And, you know...
If the Bible had been bullet points, it... Everyone no other religion would exist.
Exactly. Well, and now we've got, and I'm guilty of this the same way. I do the exact same thing. Because, you know, when my dad would get the newspaper, he would read the whole thing, and then he'd read his whole Wall Street Journal, and that's it, you know?
Long form reading, like, you know, walking through the steps of, like, you know, how to think and, like, the thought process.
We don't do that anymore.
No, we literally just, like, it's almost like we just take existing thought and then regurgitate it. And
yeah.
Like, we don't ever take the time to read through a whole article and then say, all right, what do I think about that?
And that's,
what have my experiences shown me in, you know, right. In contrast to that?
And critical thinking is the best part, I think, the best thing you can learn at a college campus.
If you only get that from your college experience, I would contend every nickel was worth it.
Yeah. And
how to critically think.
Exactly. Like, you know, all these awful articles and movies that we have to watch that I don't care about, but it... You have to think about it. You got to do the fact sheet.
That is, you know, like, it shouldn't be. Ideally, you would, like, have you taken a history course?
Yeah.
So, like, did you really? Was it Jewish history?
Didn't pay attention. No, it was a gen ed world history class.
Western Civ?
Yeah.
You took Western Civ? Okay. Yeah. So, like,
it was interesting.
The Epic of Gilgamesh and, like, the Sumerian culture and all that stuff.
It was an interesting class. I got a C because the first test I didn't do well on. You know, it was like four tests. And
it's usually all writing.
Yeah, it was all multiple choice.
That's a shame.
It was a shame. It was garbage. Because
that's really hard. I mean,
it was garbage.
Most people have never even heard of, like, you know, Akkadian culture or, like, you know, Sumerian culture or, like, any of that. Like,
it was called
the origins of Mesopotamia and that kind of stuff.
Oh, we didn't learn about it. It was called... Maybe it wasn't West. It was like History of the World or something. But it was from the...
1776, July 4th on.
No. Right.
That's the only real history.
When history started. No, we started in like the ancient Roman, the first colleges ever.
Oh, okay. Like the first Senate. Yeah, the first, like, chambers.
Right. And then...
Romulus and Remus. Did you go back that far?
We didn't learn about people, really. It was just the ideas of it, I guess. And then we ended with...
like Cato and
British,
Seneca. And
no, it was about modernization. So, like, about the first department stores in Great Britain.
Oh, industrialization and like, commerce.
That kind of stuff, yeah. And the first...
The Industrial Revolution.
Learned all about the Who.
Well, did you really?
Yeah, because our professor, that was her favorite band.
Like, countercultural stuff?
Yeah. So, it was an interesting class, but we didn't, you know, dive too deep into anything. But it gave us a broad...
And you got a C in that, huh?
Yeah. I'll tell you the story off air. It was very funny. It was very funny.
Called your professor fake history.
How we got to see. Yeah. No, it was before Donald Trump was really, because it was in 20.
The Dark Ages.
I guess it was January of 2016.
Okay.
So it was before.
Where he denounced and really become a player.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
No, it wasn't. I think it was like probably November of 2015, maybe. I don't know. No, I don't know how old I am.
I mean, does it worry? I don't think society's become anti, though, knowledge. Do you?
No, there's more knowledge now than ever before.
For sure. I think we are...
Access.
We are... Like, people have, you know, the joke, they have selective hearing. I think we have selective learning.
I think people are smarter and more knowledgeable about everything than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think so?
I do.
Yes, but I think we're lazier than ever before, and that's going hand in hand. So we're not learning, you know, because...
Well, literally our brain networks, like our neural networks have changed to the point long-form readings... way less, way more taxing mentally than it was for our parents.
So hard to do it.
Oh, yeah, it's just the way our brains have adjusted and changed.
Mm-hmm.
The actual neural pathways and, like, the dopamine reaction, that kind of thing. Like, it's just, you're going to see long-form reading be Latin. Like, you know, it'd be like someone speaking Latin.
It's honestly the reason I'm thinking about getting a flip phone, just so I can go back to reading, because it's so impossible now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you were somebody that could knock out 50 pages...
Easily. And I can't read more than three before I want to check my phone.
My messages in chat get rejected by most people and scanned over, TLDR.
right.
The lens TLDR phenomenon.
The fact that on blogs and in chat we're starting to do the TLDR thing is sad. The fact that the quickest, most just like the easiest way to communicate now is too long. Texting is too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Texting
it's got to be shorthand
text. It's got to be shorthand or it's got to be sending
or visual.
A meme. or we
now
have
that's communication though, because our like the people that can long form read don't know how to, they can't digest anything from the visual like form of communication like memes.
Right.
So like there is that argument to make as well.
Right, and I think we're split more than ever. We've got the people who can long form read mm-hmm. and long form communicate, and we've got the people who are quick.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? Like someone who can really analyze and draw out the important points extremely quickly, because that's the world we're living in. Like,
exactly.
and it's necessary.
Yeah.
Your ability to process and analyze information and the speed at which you do it, while you know, while being sure to make sure that you know accuracy is above all most important. But the ability you're able to do it accurately, it really drives your market value. You know, in what you can earn, your potential.
Right.
It really does, and that's tough because people aren't used to the quick deadlines and turnaround mm-hmm. times, and the millennials can do things a lot quicker because they have the technical chops to pull it off.
Yeah,
right.
Well, let's start wrapping up here.
Well, do you think it's a worry? The peak anti-intellectualism?
No, because everything's cyclical and everything will swing back. Like it's the world is never going to stop coming up with ideas and discussing it. That's the foundation of human nature. Like there's people want to sit and create false problems because it's so easy to sit here and say, really what it comes down to is Salon is trying to shame the right. You know, like you guys just ignore us and therefore you're all dummies.
Socially toxic to even identify as a Republican.
It's a social shame that they're trying to manipulate people into believing the way that they believe, and that I find reprehensible. There's plenty of intellectualism on all sides, and I genuinely kind of think that this, oh, all these sides aren't listening to each other, there's some of that that is true, but also I think it's we just are creating so many different headlines and narratives and then driving those narratives home to the point that they are now our truth, when they may not actually be what's happening.
Right.
And I think that this is one of those things where it's not that people on the right are anti-intellectual, it's that they're just tired of having leftist things shoved down their throat.
Like, right, groupthink for the most part.
Right.
Yeah.
With no accurate track record of accuracy to point to and say, listen, these are the this is the right way of thinking about
these
this.
These are the documents.
Yeah, show
you're,
it.
You're going to...
I've got the compressed data.
Bring out the birth certificates.
You have to realize that humans always gravitate towards freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you're trying to push an ideology that limits human freedom, people are going to push back on that. And it's not them that has the problem. It's you, the control freak, that has the problem. You know, people who are controlling, whether it's through government or through personal relationships, those are the people that have the problem, not the people who want to be free. You know, and so when I look at someone who is writing about how we are losing faith in institutions like higher education, I say, well, I'm for the fundamental questioning of why. Why anything exists.
That's the most patriotic behavior there is.
Absolutely.
Right.
Why should I listen to these people? Why should I pay attention to what they have to say? Why should Kat have to sit in a class and be lectured to? You know, and I'm not the type of person who says that's not right. They shouldn't do that. They can do whatever they want. It's Kat's choice. She has the choice as a human being, as an adult, to say I'm going to participate in this activity or not. You know, and Republicans and conservatives do the same thing, where they try to, instead of just getting up and walking away because they fundamentally question the premise, they try to pick a fight instead of
college boy,
instead of
mm-hmm. you and your science schmience,
instead of negating the power by just standing up and walking away, you know, and yeah, they'll be left to their little silos. But if you don't believe in it, don't send your kids to it. Don't pay for it. Send them to Hillsdale.
Yeah, send them to Hillsdale, or, you know. I do worry, though, one thing I don't love is, like, you know how, like, there's been, technology's made democratization, like, everywhere. So, like, no matter what you, you can get news from anywhere. Like, anyone can be a news creator. It's the democratization of every industry. You no longer control your brand. Your customers do.
Right.
You know, it's that the consumer has the power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is concerning, because there has been this shift in that it isn't the expert who is ever an expert. It's the ignorant individual. There's been a tidal shift toward because of this democratization effect where everyone is an expert.
Yeah.
and then feels entitled to be one. I don't care that they have a PhD in astrophysics. I got on Wikipedia last night. Like, my opinion should count just as much.
Right.
Right.
You know, and I that does worry me, because that's the rejection of expertise and, like, what, you know, aspiration to knowledge.
And that goes back to, you know, yes, I have a PhD in astro whatever, but think of what they're taught and how they're taught. Like I've shared, is just sitting down memorizing things.
Right.
I can sit down, I can buy their textbook, I can memorize things and teach it myself. Mm-hmm. Or I can look on the Wikipedia page where somebody has done that and made it easier for me to understand.
Acquisition and knowledge. Then you just really run into a signaling problem, was how do you separate who actually has gone on Wikipedia and has internalized that knowledge and who hasn't. Like, that's the real thing in education that's missing, is the right signaling mechanism rather than a degree.
Right.
But until that exists, the tide has shifted to where, like, crowdsourcing, it's similar to that, like, where people think crowdsourcing, you know, what the crowd decides is better than what any individual decides. And, like, democracy is the safer bet, but it's not necessarily the best outcome. Because, like, democracy gives you Justin Bieber.
Right.
Expertise gives you, Chopin and Beethoven.
Taylor Swift.
That's democracy at work. See why I'm so anti-democracy. It's the god that has failed.
Right.
Taylor Swift, you're about to push her out of a helicopter, aren't you?
Whew. Anyways.
All of a sudden, I'm feeling very Chilean.
Uncomfortable show.
No, but I mean, that's the thing, though, is, like, you wouldn't go buy classical music or download classical music, even though that's considered the most elite performing artists there are, by the people that know.
Yeah.
Because you'd go buy what you buy and read fan fiction about and conspiracy theories and...
Don't share it online.
I heard Taylor Swift.
What was the? Did you go underwater?
Don't share it.
Are you underwater?
Oh, our friend Hannah.
I got exposed to Hannah last night. And Bittner. Poor Kat.
It was a lot.
Oh, man.
Kat was sitting next to me, chose to go sit by her sister, sat next to her sister. Her sister walked away from Kat. Mm-hmm. And then,
and let me tell you, when the choice is Chloe, you're facing poor choices.
And then Bittner sat down, and she got stuck sitting next to Bittner last night.
I got it.
It was like that movie Dinner for Schmucks.
My name is Kat Anagnosen. I approve of Bittner.
Oh, see?
Physically removed.
Because we're the three best friends. We're the three best friends. This has been our show. La-da-da-da-da-da.
Don't react.
You don't want Scat
Cat
to come
here. Go to your quiet place.
Scat Cat is pretty fun.
Have you heard about Scat Cat? So a new segment we're doing on We Are Libertarians is called Scat Cat. Spangle, is it time?
Yeah. Let me zoom in on you. So make sure you see this on the YouTube channel.
All right, Scat Cat. Greg, give me a beat. Countdown. Like a 5-6.
Oh. 5-4.
No. Oh, God. He's not musical. 5-6-7-8. Beep bop, scally dap, doopity dap, bitty bop, ba da boop, 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 bitty beep, ba da bop, ba da dap, bop, ba da ba da bop, bop, skiddly dap, do bit, ba da bitty bop. Yeah. Anyway, so as we were saying, dear leader.
What was that called?
Scat Cat.
Hmm.
Thank you.
There's a lot to take in.
Hey, I'm the pop star of Liberty. I have to have some kind of thing to keep my name.
What was that? You have a nickname?
Pop star of Liberty.
Are nicknames self-appointed usually?
Spangle gave it to me, right?
Yeah.
Hmm. Hope it works out.
Anyways, thanks for listening to Real Libertarians. We promise to do better next time.
We have a whole other segment. If you'd read the show notes, you'd probably be aware.
She's ready to leave.
Yeah, she's ready to wrap up. We can wrap up.
No.
She's had enough.
I don't want to deprive I know, it's because I'm in a college class.
No, and it's the Don Trump Jr. email scandal. So there's not much to talk about other than...
Oh, let's talk about it.
What smoke, and what's fire.
Educate me, because I didn't want a long form read.
You don't care that Russians hacked the United States election?
No.
Long story short, this Russian woman, who was she?
So she was positioned as an attorney for the Russian government.
Okay.
Turns out she's also a movie maker who's been presenting and trying to raise funds for a movie about human trafficking that ties donations to the Clinton Global Initiative with an ease of restriction on a thing called the Magnitsky Law or something like that. And so she actually met with Donald Trump Jr., under the premise of this was a discussion about dirt they had, when she never mentioned the fact that she also had a movie that would be coming out.
Yikes.
And it was starring this pop star that did the connection.
Me.
Kat literally is a Russian hacker.
She is. Beep, bop, dilly, dap, dap, bop, dap.
She's fake news.
And you claim me of not having any musical ability.
He just offended Scat Cat.
Listen, I like Scat Cat. I
think skiddly dap doop dap dappity dap. Yeah. Scat Cat.
I literally feel like I'm living our like Reddit cringe right now.
Good.
Like all time setting top result.
Hey, all press is good press. Just ask Trump.
That's very true. God Emperor. Mm-hmm. He does know. He has. That is the one person.
So this woman basically sends an email, gets a hold of Trump and said,
after trying to positioning said dirt for Hillary.
Yeah, saying I've got dirt on Hillary Clinton that you're going
to
want to see.
And then she's like, I have dirt on Trump. So she had already positioned and reached out to the Clinton campaign for the allegations of dirt.
Basically wants to lobby for a change in this law in mm-hmm. American policy.
An ease of restrictions on human trafficking.
Bribes the two doesn't bribe, but basically lies to the two campaigns to get a meeting. Paul Manafort
snuffs this out and is like, this is absurd.
Leaves it within 10 minutes.
Doesn't even read the final message in the email chain.
No. Manafort stayed but was on his phone the whole time.
Yeah.
Can't imagine what that's like.
Yeah, Donald Trump Jr.
He probably needed it to make sure his selfie was good.
Yeah. Checking in the T-Swift tumblers. That Paul Manafort's on Taylor Swift tumblers in the middle of a presidential campaign.
Would have been more productive than sitting through this said meeting.
Yes, and then Donald Trump Jr. paid attention, and then the son-in-law, Jared Kushner,
yes.
stayed for 10 minutes and left. And it became clear that she didn't have anything. She just lied to get the meeting. And so, here's my final thoughts on it. Let's just get right down to brass tacks. I managed a political party for 4 years. From 2008 to 2012, I was the head of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. I was executive director. I was a paid professional political operative. I worked with my peers in the other two parties. I worked with, before that, for 4 years, working with political operatives on a news talk station. There isn't a political operative in any party ever that wouldn't have taken this meeting. Plain and simple, and if they say otherwise, they're lying. Because when you're in a campaign, you're going to take the meeting. Now, I will say this. As a libertarian, I had secret information that tens of people may have been mildly interested in, and I never put it into text messages or emails. Because you never know what could happen to that. There's written records of it. You just don't do it. So you pick up the phone and you call, or you meet in person. And you have those conversations. What Donald Trump Jr. emailed was so dumb that I can't even stand it. But
it was the action of an amateur, not a malicious intent.
Exactly right. It's just amateur, and that's what we've come to expect from them. But there's nothing here that is that, you know. Yes, it shows that there's intent for them to collude with the Russians. You could say that.
If you assume she is an actual representative of the Russian government, even though her entire Facebook page is nothing but anti-Trump stuff.
Right. So it is a meeting that any political operative of any party in any campaign would have taken had they said, I've got damaging information on your opponent. Would you like to meet about it?
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, he just did it, and most would immediately know to do it off the record or do it in a way that can never be confirmed. And
right.
They're criticizing somebody for transparency, which is a rarity for the Trump campaign.
But he ended up not... Well, why didn't they cover their tracks? Because there's nothing here.
Right.
This person's a fraud.
The allegation, everything comes down to this, is that it would be a there's a law. The interpretation of the law is that no foreign... no foreign individual can provide an asset of material gain to a political party, or else that, you know, with mm-hmm. the idea of influencing it. And the thing that's based off of that law is about financial contributions. It's right. never been interpreted as intelligence. And so they're trying to make the argument that the acquisition of intelligence, opposition research, is something of value,
mm-hmm.
which... Even though I think that's probably a very fair argument to make, that was never what the law was intended to be used for. And right. so collusion isn't even a treasonous act. That isn't an actual criminal act. Collusion isn't. So you hear collusion, that's the narrative, and that was intentionally selected to propagate this narrative that collusion is something you can be tried for when it is not. It's not mm-hmm. a legally defined thing. Conspiracy is, coordination are, but not collusion.
Right.
And so ultimately this is all... To quote Van Jones, a big nothing burger.
Yep. That's it. That's the end of that segment.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Scat bap doody da ba da ba ba dee 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 doo ba dap. Yeah.
Why do I think that's so funny, Greg?
Because it's Scat Cat. Come on.
I feel, you know, I'm very thankful there are people that are willing to accommodate the feelings of the terrible comedy of others in order to make them feel like they're funny.
It's harsh.
Hey, it's almost like a, what's his name? Dancing Frog. You know Dancing Frog?
No, I do not.
Are you talking about Pepe?
No.
I know Keck.
Dancing Frog, he's got the top hat and the little cane, and he sings, "Hello, my baby, hello, my honey."
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. 1920s, like, show tunes.
Michigan J. Frog.
Send me a rick, blah, blah, baby, my heart's on fire. Yeah.
Awesome.
So, pick which one you want.
I have frog. That's this forced
binary. Do you want
binary?
Frog cat?
Like, this is the dancing tyranny of the
frog
binary.
Cat, frog cat thing, or
are you telling me that those, it's A or B?
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you decide.
A beep bop, hello, muddy, dap, biddy, da, da.
I'm not judging. I don't judge others. That's something
I
I've,
the two
for a long
together,
time in
see?
My life, I've never judged others, and I won't judge Scat Cat since it makes you so happy.
Thank you.
Final thoughts for this episode, Cat.
Very interesting, very enlightening.
Good discussion.
Great discussion.
We are not anti-intellectualism in the way it's should be correctly defined.
Mm-hmm.
In the way the left defines it, we're anti, because
yes.
They've been disproven. Truth is, they're still polar bears. And right now, if Al Gore were right, we'd be underwater.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that I've enjoyed college. However, I've not enjoyed all of it. And I think that the education system needs a lot of work. And I think college, because of, like we said, the friends you make and the extracurricular and the skills you learn and the
the non-curriculum stuff
is great. I think the curriculum definitely needs work.
Yeah, and that the day's coming where, you know, there's going to be an enormous upheaval. You're already seeing it with the radically intense schools like Startup School and the Code School, you know, the Khan Academy. You're going to see it where something replaces the degree as the mechanism for determining this person's really got the credentials.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And that's when it'll all change. Although the educational industrial complex is even arguably worse than the military-industrial complex.
Yeah,
student loan debt dwarfs every other kind of debt there is, and it's federally guaranteed and in-house.
Yikes.
So if that bubble pops, you're talking about research, jobs, communities, just complete. Like Bloomington, Indiana, would collapse without Indiana University.
Yeah.
So you take away federal grant money.
Muncie, Indiana,
collapse.
Yeah.
I mean, the educational industrial complex is enormous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's change will be damning because of the societal upheaval the effect it would have.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll see the market adapt, and people will choose these schools and the places to acquire skills as soon as they can justify the money spent on the credential being accepted with the same equal weight as a university.
Very good. Kat, anything else?
Yeah. A beep bop, skiddly dap, doobity dap. Yeah. That
Greg,
was it.
Final thoughts, Greg?
This is great. Oh my god.
I'm hugging Greg for those who can't see.
Oh my god, Scat Cat.
We're
oh my god.
Microphone.
Oh my god. No, good episode. Mm-hmm. Not a traditional one, but I think a good one.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you did the bad. I'm so glad you're not a good Christian. I can't stress that enough.
I
and I hope the new newly acquired listeners enjoyed the show.
All yes. right.
We're happy to have you.
Happy to have you guys. My final thought is I want to thank Craig DaCosta. He's the one who sent that mystery microphone from last episode.
Thank you, Craig.
Thank you so much.
So we want to thank him for his gracious donation to We're Libertarians. You can always donate to help keep us going. As you know, we grow. The more we grow, the more expensive this becomes to run and the more stuff that we want to do. So we always need your help. So please donate at WeAreLibertarians.com. And please be sure to share this with your friends and family. Like, literally, if nothing else, if you can't donate or if you don't want to embarrass yourself, at least go to iTunes and write a review and rate us. That really helps us in terms of convincing people to download the show and also making sure that we're up there in the top rankings of news and politics and also when people search libertarian. So please, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Thank you, Kat, for being here.
Thank you for having me again.
All right. And thank you, Greg, for
tolerating Cat.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
And
enduring Scat Cat.
Yes.
I like it, Cat.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I think there are many of our listeners, tens and tens of our listeners, will love it too.
Exactly. It'll be all of my 10 accounts.
Our sock accounts.
Give great reviews.
Cat and Echoes 1, Cat and Echoes 2.
It's like yeah, We Are Libertarians brings you all the modern... And then it's like, bring back Scat Cat. Where's Scat Cat?
Oh, God.
I'm going to create...
This is like your radical lesbian Taylor Swift army.
Exactly. My separate show should be called...
Scat Cat.
Oh, now
Scat
you
Cat.
Have a separate show.
Yeah. I'm going to have my own podcast. Scat Cat. It's just going to be an hour long of... A bop, bop, doodly, dap, boopity, dap, ba, da, beep, beep, boop.
You know, I've never put my foot down on something.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have Bittner's Keto podcast to talk about.
Oh, my God.
I'm all for it.
Kat is pro Bittner.
I'm pro Bittner.
Yeah.
A beep, bop, doodly, deep, beep, beep, deep, boop, boop.
When you're on the side of someone like that, how could you be wrong?
We need a week away from each other. All three of us.
Mm-hmm. I have no issue with you. You're fine.
One more scat, and Greg's going to walk off the show.
I'm going to start.
He does not like the scat play.
No, mm-hmm. I don't. I don't encourage improvisational music.
Scatting.
That's you think I'm improv. The oh, there's been.
Oh, this has been rehearsed.
I'm that song's being produced.
Arguably more set.
All right. Thank you for listening. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.